Dirty Secrets of Small Business. This show's mission is to give you the knowledge, tools, and power to achieve success, whether you're starting a small business or already have one. I'm Jack Mancini, and I'm here with my business partner, Adam Sunholder.
Each week, we'll be talking business, small business, drawing on our collective experience having owned and operated 20 small companies and coached and advised for hundreds more. Dirty Secrets of Small Business will debunk the common myths of business ownership, expose the impact of government regulation, share small business success stories, and reveal the dirty secrets of small business.
Our show is brought to you by Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We do the heavy lifting of analyzing your business with you to identify what's working or not working and then coach you to implement and engage the right resources to help your small business thrive. Along the way, we're your partners. You'll be doing the work, and we will be there 24/7 to coach you and chart your path to success.
Give us a call at 877-849-0670. That's 877-849-0670. Or better yet, visit us at MaximumVP.com.
In today's show, we're going to be focusing on common myths of small business ownership, dirty secret of the week, a how come section, in which I'm going to kind of ponder the world and start out with a, hey, how come this or that is going on in the world? Current events, regulations impacting small business, and perhaps sprinkling in some unpolitically correct thought.
All right, our common myth this week, as we always like to start out our show, is with debunking a common myth. And this one is a pretty good one, we think, here, Jack. And that is that anyone can start a business. So it's very popular. As a matter of fact, what I'm often fond of doing, as Jack knows, is I like to go out and do some Google searches. And
I know you are, and I know you did.
All right, so here's what I found. On the phrase of how to start a business, there were 1.5 billion, that's billion with a B, results.
Wow.
So there's 1.5 billion ways to help me figure out how to start a business. And if you look at the U.S. Census Bureau report, out of the 23 million companies that exist here in the United States, about 17 million of those are one-person businesses. So the idea that anyone can start a business seems to be true. So why do we say that's not the fact?
Well, it is true. It's very true. In fact, I'm not even going to debunk that.
The big
idea, though, has to qualify starting a business. Yeah, we can get Alan here, our wonderful engineer. He's looking there primed, ready to go. We could start a business before the day's over today. And chances are we could lose money pretty easily. So there's no challenge to starting a business and losing money. The whole idea of starting a business and making profit, that's where it really comes in. That's where the rubber meets the road.
Okay.
And that's where the myth kind of wiggles its way into this.
Yeah, I think probably where it starts a lot of times is people feel that if they're good at what they do, you know, as we like to refer to it in terms of our three circles, we look at any organization, that first circle being the product and or service. So it's a very simple example. If I have somebody who's a chef at a restaurant and they're very good, well, that doesn't mean that person can then go off and start a company or start their own restaurant. Again, it means that they're a good chef. But often what people will do, I think they say, hey, I take that good skill that I've got, and let me go out there and start a company around that. And so they often do. Unfortunately, they usually do that with very little to no understanding about how business actually works. And they aren't necessarily aware of, when I talk about the three circles that we use to frame things, that product and service is only one of the three. They don't understand much, or maybe not enough, about marketing and how it drives sales. Or everybody's favorite, the administrative stuff.
Oh, boy, that is everybody's favorite. Yeah. And you're absolutely right on the nose. Anybody can start a business. And the key is to start a business with a true expectation of becoming profitable and growing those profits through the years. Most companies fail statistically. We should have, in fact, one of our next programs here down the line, we'll Google statistics for failure. So many businesses don't make it after X number of years. And we've seen that ourselves in our coaching practice. You need knowledge to run a successful business, not just an idea. To Adam's point about being a chef, hey, you're a great chef. You're people love you. You can create food. But when you go in and put a business together, what happens? You run out of money or you run out of worse, whatever worse is.
Right. Well, it's something that we see quite a bit in the small business market. And I remember back when we were first starting MVP and we discovered this whole business coaching market with that book, The E-Myth Revisited. Remember that book?
Oh, yes, yes. Right? Very and inspirational for us.
The E-myth, the E stands for entrepreneurial myth, written by a guy by the name of Michael Gerber. And he talks about that. And one of the basic premises of that is a woman named Sarah Bacon Pies. And she goes from baking pies to open her own bakery. And she's pulling her hair out because she spends 18, 20-hour days of doing everything except baking pies. She's got her employees calling off sick. She has her ovens breaking down. She's, you know, got a big vendor whose apple orchard went bad. Has to get that, you know, he has to get a new vendor replaced. She's sitting down with a cup of tea at 10 o'clock at night to go through her books.
And that is just so common with so many small business owners. They start the meter by writing a check into their business, and all of a sudden they're learning a whole bunch of things they never knew existed. Very, very frustrating. Very, very depressing in many cases. It doesn't have to be that way, though, that's for sure. But that's typically what happens in many, many small businesses.
Yeah, I think to your point before, Jack, in terms of different stats that are out there and people and companies that, you know, going out of business, we find a lot of times just people just, they give up. It isn't that they aren't necessarily making money. Usually they're making money, maybe it's not as much money as they would like, or they find that they're working harder, maybe making less than they were when they were working for somebody else, when they back when they had a job. So, again, if you're thinking about this, or you think you're pretty good at what you do in terms of your product or service, by no means are, you know, let us be clear, by no means are Jack and I saying you shouldn't start a company.
Oh, yeah. That's, I mean, we are big advocates of starting a company, but do it right.
Do it right. Make sure you're doing it. And I guess one of the key attributes we always look for folks who are very good at running their own companies is they're very curious about stuff. So wherever you work right now, if you're asking questions about what's going on besides just what product or service you offer, be aware of that. Start asking those kind of questions to see what you can learn and see if when you start, so you aren't just thinking about, hey, I'm good at being a chef or I'm good at baking pies, but I could be good at actually running a business here.
You know, we have a 14-point criteria that we don't take on clients now as, you know, we're business coaches, as you know. We don't take on clients unless they get a passing grade on this 14-point criteria. There's more than profits involved with starting a business, and things like independence and security and making a difference in the world, passion about something, those things are very important to have for success in running and creating a small business.
So yeah, it's very important to have that aspect in mind. And it goes back to something we've talked about before in terms of the riskiness of it, that if you don't know what you're doing when it comes to business, it can be very, very difficult. And just because you can start a business doesn't mean that you necessarily should start a business. Maybe that should have been our myth, that anyone should start a business. That's a better myth.
Okay, though. No, anyone can start a business, but to start a business and be successful in it, that's the key. You know, most people aren't equipped to do that.
That's the key takeaway from this segment. So just because you're good at something doesn't mean you should start that business and doing it for yourself, but learn what it means in order to be able to do that. All right, so stay with us. In our next segment, we're going to reveal our dirty secret of the week.
Oh, yes.
I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We'll be there 24/7 to coach you and chart your path to business success.
Stay tuned for more Dirty Secrets of Small Business on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, and online at WINTradio.com.
It's car season at Pat O'Brien Chevrolet. If you've been hunting for that special used car or truck, your hunt is over. Because we sell more new Chevys than any dealer in Ohio, we take in more trades. Every make and model. We got them. Come get them at Pat O'Brien Chevrolet.
AlterCare of Mentor has received a 5-star rating from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, the highest achievable rating. Whether your needs are short-term rehabilitation, extended care, or Alzheimer's dementia care, we are your healing link. We'll help you heal as you transition from hospital to home. And if your long-term needs are an assist with activities of daily living, we'll be there for you and provide a warm and loving environment. Renew your spirit and restore your health with award-winning 5-star provider AlterCare of Mentor.
affordable, and reliable. That's Tom Schaefer Plumbing. Quality craftsmanship and dependable service. Clogged drains or leaky pipes? Call Tom Schaefer Plumbing with prices that won't drain your wallet. Trust their specialist to solve your plumbing issues. Bathroom sink repair, drain pipe or tub drain repair, and installation and repair of floor drains. No job is too big or too small. Emergency? Call Tom Schaefer Plumbing, offering 24-hour assistance. Service you can afford, a name you can depend on. Tom Schaefer Plumbing, 440-602-7300.
You know Madison Square Garden as The Garden, the world's most famous arena where top-named entertainers and athletes come to perform. Dining at Manhattan Deli and Menor gives you a taste of The Garden with abundant Madison Square Garden salads, refreshing, fresh, and healthy. Order the mango chicken salad with pecans, cranberries, strawberries, and mango topped with chicken tenders. Try the Park Avenue Cobb salad with blue cheese and bacon, or Central Park salad with mozzarella, ham, and black olives topped with homemade garlic dressing. Manhattan Deli and Menor. Good food that's good for you.
It's the Wake Up Show. Join Linda, Rob, and me at 6 a.m. with lifestyle expert Harriet Cole revealing what defines a good neighbor. Fox News Channel co-host of Outnumbered, Andrea Tanteros, talks about her new book, Tied Up in Knots, How Getting What We Wanted Made Women Miserable, on Integrity Radio, WINT, 1330 a.m.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're your small business coaches. We understand the larger or that larger companies don't have the same challenges that smaller businesses face on a daily basis. So we have made it our passion, and believe me, we are passionate. We have made it our passion to understand what makes small businesses work.
In this segment, we're going to explore our dirty secret of the week. And you're invited to join the conversation. Remember, our number here is 440-946-9468. That's 440-946-WINT. So it's that time of our show, Jack, where we get to reveal the dirty secret of the week.
Who's going to do that? Do you, Adam?
I don't think I can do that. I'll give it a shot. Let's see. All right. All right, so the dirty secret this week is you're going to have to fire someone eventually.
Oh, boy, that's a fun thing, isn't it? Firing somebody eventually. You know, every organization, it grows and it contracts. I mean, that's the normal ebb and flow of everything, really. But organizations are no different. People change as well as the company. And sooner or later, if your company's around for a while, and that would be probably after at least a year, maybe sooner sometimes, but at least a year and going forward, you're going to have to fire somebody. Now, there's a big legal spectrum and a bunch of regulations that our government at all levels like to impose on small businesses, but there are also a lot of rules that are in place now. You know, you can't fire somebody for age, you can't fire them for race, gender, religion, disability, if they were a whistleblower or there's harassment involved and somebody was involved in that, if you fire those people, you could be in for a very unpleasant time, unfortunately.
All right, so you gave me a long laundry list of things I can't fire somebody for. All right, well, what can I fire somebody for? Or what should I? I mean, what should I fire somebody for? We start there. That's
I like to say because you aren't a good employee, but that seems to be moving away more and more from the main screen here.
Right.
You know, there's a little cliche that you should hire slow and fire fast. I don't know where that cliche used to be valid a long time ago, but it's hard to fire fast today.
Well, yeah. So now in today's world, it seems to be hire fast and hang on to people. It's almost the reverse, right? Your point is it's hard to fire fast, but they almost never do. They try to do reclamation projects, and the amount of firing that would need to be done would be better if they followed that slow to hire piece, right, as opposed to just get somebody in here to get stuff done.
That's right. Try to correct the mistake before it happens, so you put that front end time in. But who can you fire today? Somebody who's incompetent has more due process and rights.
They do. Well, they have a good lawyer,
owner,
right?
It seems.
Well, it's key. I think that the mindset, the point we're trying to make here is the mindset to have that if you are going to get into business, that eventually You know, that's not one of the reasons why you want to get into business, that I'm going to have to fire somebody. Okay, we aren't talking about, you know, Donald Trump on The Apprentice here to say, you know, you're fired. It's not like that.
You know, that's a good point, though. I think a lot of people who have never run, or even people who work in business, think that that's how it's done.
Right.
With the Donald Trump, right. You're fired.
Yeah, that's drama for TV, right?
It's
a painful process. I remember, you know, we've been through with different clients of ours, and happens a lot with transitions. I remember once what happened where, you know, the son had to make the firing, and, you know, the dad was in there with him to help give him moral support. And he said when he went and made that firing decision, to announce it to the employee, he said his face went white. I'm sure his palms were sweaty. And even though we'd role-played it a bunch to get him ready for it, until you're in that moment, the biochemistry that you feel, it's indescribable until you've been there. You know, it's very tough. But it's one of those things you got to be aware of. And, we had a client years ago, and, we can't make this stuff up because it has to be true, right? She bought a company. She'd worked for a company for a number of years. The company went bankrupt, and she bought it out of bankruptcy. Now, her sole reason for buying the company was to keep the 22 employees employed.
I've never met anyone like her ever.
Amazing.
And
I don't think
we will jointly either meet somebody like her again. The whole reason is to keep people working. Very
yes.
noble, very wonderful, but
well,
B-U-T-T.
Yeah, but be your favorite. So we met her about 7 years into this, right? And she had achieved her goal. She had maintained all those folks and kept them employed. And wouldn't you know it, that she had not taken a dollar for herself the entire time. Now, fortunately for her, she was happily married for a long time, and her husband was able to help, you know, support her and to help pay the bills. But boy, I'm not sure how many people we know that would sign up for that, okay, in terms of, hey, let me make sure they all stay employed and I get paid nothing. I mean, again, we said that's fantastic, but okay, here's some changes. And she got to the point where she's fed up with it, which is why she brought us in, was to help kind of make that happen. But so she went in with that wrong mindset.
Very unusual person.
Right.
You know, when you do determine to fire, you're going to fire somebody, you first of all have to do that yourself, especially if they're a direct report. You don't farm that off as much as you being the boss would like to do that. Hey, Adam, why don't you take care and fire Nancy here? I think it'll be a good training for you, blah, blah, blah.
I'm feeling under weather, Jack. I'm not sure I can do that today. I'm going to have to go home sick.
You got to prepare, especially in today's world, and it's probably a good thing to have or discuss, the firing with a labor attorney. You have to have good reasons and next steps, and when you do the deed, you have to and should have a witness with you and escort them really out of the building. I mean, have them hopefully sign a release form, which would eliminate liability. And don't talk a lot. You know, the tendency is to talk a lot. I remember the very first person I had to terminate, and she was older than me, and she was a long-term employee, a very good employee. But the company was losing money, and cutbacks had to be made. We were just at that point. So she was the first person I terminated of any real substance. And I brought her in and sat her down, and I made the mistake of talking a lot. I had to talk to her before I could deliver the bad news, almost 40 minutes. I mean, it was bad. I mean, and she knew it was coming, and I knew I couldn't utter the words. I mean, it is an emotional situation for both sides, and don't think it's easy, because it's never easy. And I've since fired, unfortunately, more people through my career, and it's never easy. But one thing I did learn is don't talk a lot. That's for
great.
Sure.
Oh, that's great.
Just do what you have to do and get it over with.
Do the deed. That's a good way to put it there. And I guess before we get to the deed, though, I think one of the things we've learned a lot, or we see people delaying on, is when you've made the decision to do it, make it happen.
Yes.
People often will delay. We have a lot of clients that do that. We had one recently that did this, and he was trying for months, maybe the better part of a year, to try to find a different place for this person, and it was obvious that it just wasn't the right fit, and wound up costing himself a lot of money, almost six figures, having this person on, and they really weren't adding much value. But to your point, Jack, it gives you a sense of just how emotional these things can be, and this this client of ours, intellectually he understood it, right? But he had kind of a paternalistic feel about this particular employee. You know, he felt bad about it. So, you know, the emotions are very real, very real.
And when they come up to your point, you know, when we're talking with our clients about a particular employee in a negative way, it's not us so much talking about them as the owner. So we meet with the owner, and one of the first things the owner starts talking about is this employee who he or she is having trouble with. And this goes on meeting after meeting after meeting, and we've been together now 13 years and doing our business coaching. And we have found out one thing for sure, without doubt, when a business owner meets with us and spends half or better than the time that we're together talking about an employee, nitpicky kind of things in some cases, some major, we know that employee is not destined to be there, and let's get it over with. What are we waiting for? There's no good rational reasons for the most part. It's a hope beyond reality here that somebody's going to be rehabilitated, one of my favorite words. You aren't going to rehabilitate and make things good again.
Well, it's a combination.
Doesn't happen.
Well, trying to rehabilitate or trying to find that right seat of it. And, you know, Jack and I deal with a lot of family businesses. Okay, we've got parents and kids and siblings and everybody else kind of involved in it. And, you know, we have one case going on right now where you've got the sibling trying to move the other sibling around to different seats on the bus, and we've known for 2 years now this is probably not going to work, but again, it comes down to him making that decision. So as you're looking at your hiring and the slow to hire piece, keep that in mind, especially when you're dealing with family and friends. Okay, they may be a great sibling, a great cousin, a best friend, but you bring them into the business, and all bets are off at that point. It's very different.
Absolutely.
And so very Jack's difficult. Describing that emotional story of, you know, of one of his first firings was somebody, it was an employee. You know, he knew her and everything, but it wasn't a sister or a cousin or whoever. It was another person, okay? It wasn't a family member or a close friend. So take that and multiply it exponentially to where it's that family or friend person to say, hey, we have to cut ties. It becomes very, very difficult to the point where a lot of our clients
just
haven't
can't
done
pull
it.
That trigger. Yeah. Yeah, some cannot pull that trigger. They're going to sacrifice their organization. One little piece of being prepared. Part of your planning when you terminate an employee should be involved with filling the void that person is going to be involved with.
That's right. So you can see that. It makes it much easier. All right, so stay tuned. That was our dirty secret of the week. When we come back, we'll have the how come section, and we'll see what's on Jack's mind today. My name is Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We will be there 24/7 to coach you and chart your path to business success.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. Don't forget that. We're your small business coaches. We understand that larger companies don't have the same challenges that smaller businesses face on a daily basis. So we've made it our passion to understand what makes small businesses work.
All right. In this segment, we have our how come segment with a question mark. So what's on your mind today, Jack?
Today, how come communication about your small business is so hard? Oh, well, first of all, the reason is it's complicated. It's one of the longest definitions of a word you're going to find in the dictionary. So unlike Adam, who loves the Google and does an excellent job at it, I Wikipedia'd the word communication.
Yeah, you can get the Wikipedia from Google, Jack. Come
That's
on.
What I did.
Oh, okay. There you go. So you did Google.
I did. I did.
All right, go ahead.
All right. So when I looked at that definition in Wikipedia of communication, there were 12 long categories, 12. Now, let me give you some examples of those. There's verbal communication, nonverbal, written, business communication, family communication, interpersonal, barriers to communication, non-human, that would be an interesting one, models of communication, noise, academic setting for communication. In other words, there's a lot of definitions, and each of these definitions had pages in and of themselves. So if you want to put yourself to sleep someday and take hours to do it, that's a great place to start.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you saying something, Jack? We're on the communication front. I'm messing with you. All right. So
you're messing with me. Wait, you gave me a terrified look. Like, wait, did engineer say, hey,
no, we're
screw
good.
You.
I was making a point about how the communication would be very difficult, right?
Oh, wait a minute. I want to make a point here, though.
Go ahead.
All right. There was a great movie, Back to School, with Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, yeah. One of our favorites.
And Rodney Dangerfield was a successful construction businessman, you know, made a lot of money, just a good man, but really made it through the school of hard knocks and understood what it takes. And the movie, and he's a funny guy. So he also alienated a professor, a very pompous professor who in economics, who was out to get him. And the way the show finally wound its way, Rodney was in front of a panel of three or four people, and this professor was one of them. And they were going to give him a verbal test. And if he passed that verbal test, he would pass and become a success in school. So the professor asked him, when he stood up, the professor said, I have just one question for you, pointing it to Rodney Dangerfield, who was totally relieved. I have one question for you. But there's 27 parts to it. And I could not help, when I read the definition in Wikipedia about communication, how complicated it is. That movie kept coming to mind.
Yeah, you got a flashback read to that.
And that was a terrific movie. Now, most workers, and in my own personal experience, and I'm going to speak for Adam, I'm sure, on this, most workers are going to say management owners don't communicate enough. They don't communicate enough in the business.
And how often do we hear our clients or owners of companies talk about, but I told them that numerous times. And they
stumbling,
what do you mean they don't get
stumbling
it?
Stumbling
right?
over each other's shoes, that's right. For sure. I have an article here. You know how I like to clip out articles.
Hey, it's my newspaper. Look at that.
That's right. what are those? This article's titled Transparency is Key to Employee Trust. And it's done by a Cindy Kirchner Goodman from the Miami Herald. And I just want to read one little section I outlined in this. I thought it was a pretty good article. It was very timely since communication is what we're talking about right now. So this little section that I outlined here in this newspaper article about transparency. Regardless of the path employees have taken, the debate about open communication still permeates most workplaces. For employers, it's worth noting that skepticism about management transparency is real and troublesome. A full quarter of employees don't trust their employers, and only half believe that their employers are upfront with them. This is according to a 2014 American Psychological Association, so we're in good company there, Adam, a survey of 1,562 U.S. workers. That lack of trust is significant because employees are more engaged and happier at companies whose cultures support transparency. And this is according to a 2015 employee retention study of 400 U.S. employees by a Seattle-based Tiny Pulse. That's what it's called, an employee engagement firm. So people want communication. And they're asking for it, and the brainiacs in the world are studying this like mad and saying, hey, if you want management, if you as managers want people to trust you, you got to talk about the company. So let me just make another point here. So it's obvious, it's an obvious problem that in most companies, transparency begets trust. But what in the world should the owners be communicating? Isn't that a problem, Adam? We have a solution for it, but I'm going to ask Adam because I know he knows the answer to that.
We're talking about our seven keys, Jack.
That's exactly right. We have the answer, and it's in the seven keys, and it's in the three circles. If you keep hanging with us through the years here, because we're just getting going, you're going to understand the seven keys and three circles, and that's going to be driving you to be a success in your small business.
Well, it's important to know what to communicate. I think, let me talk about this for just a second here, Jack, in terms of how you communicate. So you went through those different 12 different levels on Wikipedia. Let me just try to make it real simple. There's three basic forms of communication. The visual, what people see. The auditory, what people hear. Okay, that's part of what we're doing here on the radio. But also the kinesthetic.
That sounds like, didn't he ride with Lone Ranger a long time ago?
He may have. I haven't seen all those episodes, Jack. That's more the tone and the feeling.
Oh, that's Kemosabe, excuse me. Yeah, okay.
Kemosabe's okay. Kemosabe. That's Tonto. He's Kemosabe.
That's right.
That's close. It begins with a K, though. That's good. So, but the visual, what people see, the auditory, what they hear, and the kinesthetic, which is a big part, which is how they feel. Now, the visual usually is the biggest part of that communication. So often people will just talk, okay? And they have to be aware of it. So when you're communicating, how you communicate is very, very important as well. Because you can be communicating all the right things and still not doing it well. All right, if you're up there in front of your group talking, you aren't showing them things. You aren't handing things out. You aren't drawing on a whiteboard. You aren't showing the visual part of it. If you're droning on and you're not excited about what's going on, because this is your business you're excited about. Here's where we're going. If you don't have that tonality, the kinesthetic feel of what's going on. So how you communicate stuff is very, very important. Also important to be able to build that trust you're talking about.
That's right. Well, you know, we teach our clients that. You know, we reference our seven keys. The seventh of the keys is presentation.
Yes, it is.
And how do you present to different audiences? You know, so you're an owner of a small business. You should be able to present your company as well as the chairman of a major publicly traded company. That's how good you should be. And we'll teach you how to do that. But there's a different piece of information or groups of information that you'll present to your employees in a way that they can understand that would differ from your bankers or some investors or some customers or some vendors. You have to know your audience, and as you're presenting, you have to look at them. And you have to understand if you're resonating or not and be able to adjust yourself. But to Adam's point, you know, to be inspirational is huge. And if you're excited about your business, and you should be, it's a passion, it's your livelihood, it's your security, it's everything you want it to be. Why in the world shouldn't you be presenting this excitedly to whoever it is you're talking? That's infectious. And that's what transparency to me is all about, where you're talking about the company. And we like, you know, when I owned and operated companies, I would tell people anything going on in that business except one thing. And that's what everybody made, what their wages were. And even that's starting to break down in companies today. But I'm still reluctant to do it only because it doesn't seem to serve a good purpose. It's a subjective, ultimately, it's a subjective thing, and that's where you start to get in trouble. But why somebody's doing things, why Adam's out golfing, people want to know that.
That's right.
Anyway.
Well, it's all right. So make sure that you embrace this idea of communication. Don't look at it as a burden, and be excited about being able to present the right things and how you do it to your customers or to your employees as well. All right, so stick with us when we come back. We'll be touching on our small business success story of the week. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We'll be there 24/7 to coach you and chart your path to business success.
How sweet it is to be loved by you.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're your small business coaches. We understand that larger companies don't have the same challenges that smaller businesses face on a daily basis. So we have made it our passion to understand what makes small businesses work.
In this segment, we're going to share a small business success story. And this week, we're going to share about one of our clients who was a client for a number of years. Very, very interesting story. Very interesting story. So let me frame the situation for you here with this client that we're going to talk about today. And the key question is, what do you do when the keys to the family business get dropped in your lap? And the business has been struggling and is in debt. And you have no other options but to fix it. So what do you do? That's a pretty big burden that happens. And that was a scenario with this client that we met. It's probably 10 years ago now, Jack, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good guess. I mean,
So she had been, her and her brother, and they had worked in this family business since the day it started. They remember it starting at the kitchen table. And that's all they knew. They had never worked for anybody else. They only worked in this family business. And so one day the mom tragically died in a car wreck. And the keys were literally tossed to the kids. So here you go. Congratulations, you now own a business. And they had a sense for a little while that the company wasn't doing as well as maybe it had in the past, but they really didn't know all the details.
Well, they had worked in the business, but, you know, very, very narrow scope of things, if you will, their duties. They didn't have the broad picture and the experience, that's for sure.
Sure. When it comes to our three circles, the one sibling was involved in the delivery of the product and services. The other sibling was really basically making some sales calls. Everything else was being taken care of by, you know, mom and dad passed away, and it was being taken care of by mom.
Yeah, somehow the lights go on and paychecks arrive.
But you have a sense. They kind of knew that it wasn't going as well, but, you know, it's almost one of those kind of don't ask, don't tell kind of things, and but they knew it wasn't going great. But they weren't quite sure how bad it was until after mom passed away. And so we met her about a year after her mom passed away. And she talks about how she doesn't even recall a lot of the details that first year. You know, just taking so much in. You know, the fact then dealing with the grief of losing a parent, but also then dealing with, you know, you've got people calling you. Again, people will be patient to a certain extent, and people are human in that. But, you know, after a few weeks, a few months, okay, well, hey, the fact that your mom just passed away, you know, I'm sorry about that, but hey, you owe me some money, you know. And so she knew she needed some help. And she looked around, hey, I've worked here for 30 years. This is what I know. There's emotional attachments tremendously to this business, to the employees, to the family that was involved in the company. So she wanted to get it right. So one of the first things we do with any struggling company is we got to get our hands around the cash flow. And we got to know if we're making money or not. And, you know, Jack alluded to earlier in the show about our 14-point criteria here in terms of looking at folks who are coachable. And she was very coachable from the standpoint of being able to put in the blood, sweat, and tears that was needed to figure this stuff out. And she's learning. She's a very good student on this stuff and learning along the way and how to make these things start to happen. So we very quickly were able to pull together a forecast to see that they, in fact, were able to make some money. And that's part of what you start to do is, you know, don't worry about the older debts. Let's put that stuff aside for right now. If you're in a hole, and you shouldn't keep digging, right? So she was in a hole. So let's forget about that hole. Let's make sure we can make some money going forward.
Sure, that's always the case. You know, creditors who are behind will always, because they don't have much of a choice, continue to stay behind until the company can catch up with them and make them whole again.
So we had about a $250,000 hole that we were talking about here, which seemed, you know, at that point to her almost insurmountable. How are we ever going to pay all this money back? So we said, let's put that aside for now. Let's figure out, do we have a way to make money, what we're doing right now? Because, again, if we aren't making money, quit digging. Stop digging and just, you know, again, you know, even if you don't want to shut things down, if it makes more sense versus getting into a bigger hole. So fortunately, we were able to put together a plan very quickly that showed positive cash and showing profits, which is good. And that enabled us to have a plan to now go back to that $250,000 and be able to now start to be able to pay it off. But she was in debt to everybody from her landlord to her CPA to the bank. Fortunately, they didn't have it. You know, I think they had a little bit of tax issues as well. It was employment tax.
Yeah, they were tax issues. And so, it's important to note that without a plan like this, when you make a promise to somebody, how in the world do you know you can keep it? And that's what gets a lot of small business owners in trouble. They don't have a plan, and they aren't disciplined and knowledgeable enough to put one together. So they just make their vendors, they just piss them off. That's what they do. And that's what ultimately drives a company under.
Yeah, it comes back to the whole squeaky wheel thing. So whoever's making the most phone calls or making the most threatening phone calls, they tend to get paid. But yet I'm promising payment to you, Jack, and I'm promising payment to Alan over there, and promising payment to Rosemary and everybody else. Okay, well, Jack got to the bank first, so his check cashed and theirs bounced. So not only are they not paid, they're mad because they thought they were getting paid and it got sucked out from underneath them, right?
That's right.
So having that down there, and one of the aha moments she had, though, was this whole idea that you can negotiate stuff. That was, you know, she was like a kid in a candy store with that. I mean, she still talks about it today, almost 10 years later, about it. You know, I had no idea I could negotiate this stuff.
Everything is negotiable. Hey, that's what the guy running for president is saying right now. That's what he does such a good job of.
So being able to become empowered. So having this, first of all, having this plan laid out, showing a profit, you know, again, by month, showing the cash flow forecast, say we're making money on the base business, having now a plan to go back and literally go through each of those vendors. And part of it was prioritizing. Okay, so the government, you know, gets, you know, first priority. They've got, you know, they got to deal with the IRS first, make sure we had that taken care of. We got a payment plan there to get taken care of. If you have people who are all of a sudden not willing to work with you, well, those folks went to the bottom of the heap very quickly. And folks who are willing to work with you, ones you, that she started spending some time with. So in a matter of about 12 to 18 months, she got all that debt relieved. Paid off, negotiated, paid down, and all of a sudden that huge burden, that huge hole that we were in to start with, was gone.
Just a little side note, and you're absolutely right, that $250,000 was gone. Totally under control. But somebody who doesn't cooperate in a situation like this, especially when you're putting your best foot forward, best intentions, all that good stuff, showing a plan, as Adam said, they move to the back of the line. They can sue, they can yell, they can do what they want to do, but they basically have put themselves in a hole by not cooperating. So if you have a good demeanor based on a good plan, you're going to go far if the company is viable after you do your analysis of it.
That's right. And one of the things, too, that you learned, Jack, to kind of build on what you're saying, when you go back to, you know, you have some key vendors, and I'm sure you can imagine they get emotional, they get upset, they're pissed off about things, and say, wait a minute, okay, let me go on COD. Don't give me credit, but I need what you're offering, right? And you'd be amazed, most vendors will let you go on COD. Most of them will let bygones be bygones. Not that you don't have to pay back that debt that's owed, but they aren't going to cut off their nose to spite their face, so to speak, right? They'll let you go on COD. And that's part of what she did. She had some key vendors that she needed.
You know, wait, another side.
That's all right.
We like to instill attitude in our clients, especially when there's doom and gloom and they're feeling the world's crumbling down. So if I'm going to give you, Adam, if I'm going to give you cash on delivery, COD, hey, no other customer that you're dealing with pays as fast as I do. So I'd like a discount.
That's right.
So that's the attitude. Here, I owe you $25,000. That's a year past due. But we're going to do COD business, and I'm going to have confidence enough to say, hey, I want a discount if I give you. And that creates a little laughter, and sometimes you get it, you know? But certainly that kind of attitude becomes important down the line.
And you can imagine the looks we get from our clients, right? It's that deer in headlights, like, you can really do that? And then when they do it, they smile. I said, okay, I didn't know I could do that. So she got a crash course in business, to say the least. But she was soaking it up like a sponge. It was a big part of it. And as part of that process, she was able to double the business as part of that, which was fantastic as well to see that growth. And has a fantastic story to be able to make those things happen. So it's, and to Jack's point, if things look like they're doom and gloom, it isn't always the case. We see very good opportunities as long as you can forecast the ability to be able to make a profit. So to go from $250,000 hole to doubling the business in less than 4 years?
Great story.
That's a pretty good story, wouldn't you say?
I would say absolutely.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Dirty Secrets of Small Business. We invite you to tune in every Monday at noon. If you have any questions before our next show, you can email them at radio@MaximumVP.com. Post at facebook.com/MaximumVP. Or call us at 877-849-0670. That's 877-849-0670.
At Maximum Value Partners, we work hard to build long-term relationships and become not only your valued advisors, but also your trusted friends. If you're looking to be a successful, knowledgeable business owner, to take your company anywhere you want to go, we can help.